Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Gambling Files TLDR. For those not in the know or in with the cool kids, that stands for Too Long Didn't Read. It's usually three stories from recent gambling industry, and we will dive into those, speak to some experts, and put together an episode for you. My co-host and brother in arms is Fintan Costello. Fintan, hello.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. I'm surprisingly handsome. You?
I'm dashing. I'm going to go with dashing today.
Excellent. And we are joined by a man that I can only truly describe as a legend in the pinball industry, unfortunately. Mr. Tom Neiman, principal at Apollo Gaming Group. Tom, thank you for joining us today. Welcome.
Welcome, guys. I am not dashing, but hanging in there.
But to be fair, Tom, I think, you know, looks go out of the window at a certain age. but you're here today not to talk about how handsome you were in the 1970s. You're here to tell us a bit about what's going on in Japan at the moment, because there's been some very, very interesting developments. First things first, what's your experience with Japan? Why are we listening to you, Tom?
That's an excellent question. I have been fortunate enough to have touched and gone into Japan for quite some time. Most recently, I spent the last almost 15 years working for JCM, Japan Cash Machine, and was forced to go to Japan and learn about that industry there, mostly the pachinko world. But when the IR bill passed, I believe it was 2016, Prime Minister Abe pushed that through. I got very, very involved working with JCM in Japan on the potential of gaming coming to the island. And many opportunities to attend various conferences, trade shows, speak at them, and meet with government officials. The last time was in 2019, I believe. I was representing AGEM. I was president of AGEM at that time.
And before the world went to shit.
and went over and had an opportunity to sit down with government officials and explain sort of an industry position and what role an AGM could play for them.
Okay. Now, looking at what's going on now, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, which is highly possible, three initial licenses for integrated resorts. Yeah.
That was what was passed, that the country would issue three 7-year licenses on an initial go round. And then after that, they would look at other opportunities.
Okay. So the three initial IR licenses, when I say IR, of course, I mean integrated resort, Osaka, and two more. What's the status of those licenses right now?
Well, Osaka does look solid because MGM has committed to Osaka from day one, has worked diligently in building a team over there and building a relationship over there. And MGM goes into it in a very strong position. So Osaka looks like a lock and a solid one. The two additional ones, there were three cities in the running. They just had an election, a mayoral election in, it looks like it knocked out one of them. It looks like the two will be Nagasaki and Wakayama. And both have been aggressive almost as long as Osaka has, but they look like they're in great position to end up with the additional two to give you three total.
Okay, so there was an election, wasn't there? There was an election recently.
Yes,
I think a mayoral
election in Yokohama. And for those who don't know, Yokohama sits on what I believe it's called the Tokyo Bay. It has a huge population. Although it's a subset of Tokyo, it's a huge population, over 30 million people. And the mayor who was in position was a pro-IR candidate, ran, had been mayor, and he was defeated by a person running on the anti-AR position against the building of a integrated resort in Yokohama, and won the election. And so it would appear that would knock them out of the race, and that would leave positions then just for Wakayama and Nagasaki.
So very, very interesting times in Japan. Tom, thank you for your insight there and bringing us up to date on that. We will be discussing the status of those licenses, the impact of the elections, and the future for the IR awarding process in our sister podcast, The Gambling Files RTFM. And for those of you not down with the cool kids, read the fucking manual. Tom, thank you for today.
You are more than welcome, sir.
And now it's time to welcome our second guest, or guests, I should say, plural. I mean, Fenton's still here. But we're joined by Roz Wade and Sharon Singleton of AG Brief. Roz, Sharon, welcome.
Hi, John. Great to be here.
Do you know what? It's definitely more of a pleasure for us than you. So the reason I invited you guys on as guests is because of your particular expertise in Asia and because of the way that things are evolving and developing quite suddenly in the Philippines. Roz, what's going on, please?
Well, the Philippines, like many other Asian countries, have suffered pretty badly during the pandemic, and a lot of the casinos were shuttered during much of last year. However, it seems as though things are, you know, sort of still developing in terms of new projects. And the latest is that two new projects have got the green light, quite surprisingly, recently from the president, President Duterte, in one of the islands called Boracay.
Yes, and this was, as Roz said, quite a surprise because there had been a total moratorium on all new casino licenses and an outright ban on Boracay. So this took everybody by surprise, as the president really is trying to scrape together money to pay for their COVID efforts.
Is that moratorium on sort of new licenses, et cetera, is that across the entire island chain? Because, I mean, there's a lot of places, aren't there?
It was. It was imposed in 2018, and it was when we were seeing a proliferation of new projects being announced, and he said enough is enough.
So, and with a specific ban on Boracay?
Yes, Boracay very specifically.
Exactly. Yes. So Boracay in particular, they closed down, in fact, a couple of years ago. So they closed down the whole island. It's probably the best known of the outlying islands in terms of tourism, just because it's, for, you know, it's one of the most developed. But because of that success, I mean, it's got one of the most beautiful, if not the most beautiful beaches in the world. It has been overdeveloped. So there were huge environmental concerns. The president actually shut the whole island down for 6 months to, you know, redo the infrastructure, clean it up and make it sanitary. So it has reopened, of course, to tourism since then. But he has always said that, you know, there wouldn't be any casinos on there. So that's really where the surprise comes, is offering these new, these two new projects the green light.
What's the local reaction been like?
It's been quite a strong backlash, as you can probably imagine, from environmental campaigners who say the island cannot support mass tourism. And already with the reopening, they have too many there. But the local mayor has supported it. And I think, you know, the fact that these economies are hurting so badly is really a reason for them to take another look at these types of resorts.
Yeah. And another thing is that, you know, it's supported by PAGCOR, which is the gaming regulator there, who are saying that they're going to create, you know, lots of thousands of jobs this way. And it actually is sort of internationally focused integrated resort is preferable to the current offerings. Now, there are some, you know, very nice but fairly upscale resorts there, but there's also a lot of much smaller places. And then once you get away from the beachfront, it's all sort of shacks and small holdings. So I guess the idea is that, a bigger and more international resort is actually preferable rather than these smaller, you know, less perhaps conscientious, local players that they have at the moment.
Yeah, although there are then strong questions over the viability of these resorts given COVID itself, because some of the investment dynamics have now changed, and these would not be projects that were catering to the local Philippine market. The attraction of the Philippines is it's one of the few markets in Asia where local Filipinos are allowed to gamble in casinos. And without their support, it would have been hard to survive during COVID. And these would not be catering very much for very few of the local community.
Thank you very much for joining us on this first episode of The Gambling Files TLDR. If you'd like to hear more about this, we'll be delving deeper into the subject with Roz and Sharon on The Gambling Files RTFM. Our final guest today on The Gambling Files is already here. It's Fintan. Hello.
Hi, John. Again.
Well, I'm just glad to have you back, Fintan, even though you never actually went anywhere.
Exactly. You're stuck with me now. You can't go.
So we've got something to discuss that you know about. We are going to discuss, to be fair, you're going to discuss, and I'm just going to nod and smile, which I appreciate doesn't work without video. Recent change or recent proposed changes to the regulatory landscape for iGaming in Australia. What's going on?
So there's lots happening in Australia. So to kind of set the context for anybody that's not fully up to speed in Australia, when we look at Australia from an iGaming perspective or an online gambling perspective, you can gamble online for sports betting, but you can't play online casino, for example. So it's very much an online sports betting product, not an online casino product. And I'll loop back to the casino stuff at the end because there's some other stuff happening there too. From a land-based perspective, Australians love to gamble, and it's a huge part of Australian culture. So early this year, early May, a parliamentary inquiry kicked off around the use of credit cards for online sports betting, and to bring them more in line, or to bring it in line with what's happening on the land-based side. So from a land-based perspective, if you're in a casino, if you're in a pub playing the slot machines and things like that, you're not allowed to use a credit card. And also the ATMs nearby won't issue cash advances. So there's a quite a strict kind of payments process going on there. But you can use a credit card to place an online sports bet. So there's a huge gap between the legislation. Initially, when it was announced, I think a lot of the feedback from the bookies was this will encourage people to go offshore, and I think there's definitely an element to that. But in the reality of it is that a lot of the Australian banks were already blocking credit card payments, so a lot of the smaller banks, and then some of the bigger banks started to do the same thing anyway ahead of the legislation. And now also the way that one of the big concerns was the way that credit cards are dealt with by the banks when you gamble online. So they're actually treated as cash advances, which triggers a 25% interest rate if you miss payments. So there's a huge, huge issue around using credit cards for gambling anyway. The Australian Banking Association did a survey, and 54% of Australians agreed that there should be a ban. 80% agreed that there should be some sort of restrictions. And I think with the way the wind was blowing, the fact that the banks themselves were blocking credit cards, clearly public sentiment was against it as well. The Responsible Wagering in Gambling in Australia, which is basically all the big online bookies, have announced that they're going to stop processing or accepting payments via credit cards. So ahead of the legislation, that they're getting ahead of the legislation, they've announced this. It's a good thing to do. And that's what's happening in Australia there. But it's not the only thing that is being banned in Australia. So there's a ministry, the Communications and Media Authority in Australia. So when we go back to the casinos, they've been busy blocking at an ISP level various online casinos, and they've claimed they've blocked 279 illegal gambling websites was the number I found. But what they've also done now for the first time is they've actually blocked a number of gambling affiliates. So these are people like myself. Well, we don't do it in Australia, but comparison websites that are listing online casinos that will accept Australian customers. So they've also been blocked at an ISP level, and the ACMA, the Australian Communications Media Authority, is claiming this as a really big win for them. I've obviously got strong views on this. I think it's not a big win. I've actually looked up those websites. They're already redirected. There's already workarounds. If you use a VPN, you can already bypass these restrictions. So it's a very nice headline. It's trying to, you know, the horse is already bolted. Online casino should be legal, should be legislated, should be licensed for, and it should be brought within the fold. I'm very pro that. But it's the first time in a long time that anybody's actually gone after affiliates, which I think is also a really interesting trend and a big change. So that was my Australian news.
And it's quite big news. It's something that we will go into in much greater detail in the Gambling Files RTFM, which you'll be able to hear, well, really soon. Thank you for your insight, Fintan.
Thank you, John.
And thank you for joining us for the first episode of the new podcast, the new format. Any questions and comments, please feel free to email your parents and let them know your thoughts.